little something between you and me. Don't cost you nothing, this one's for free.
Christine, thank you ever so much for coming in today. I've asked you to come in to talk about your diabetes. Most specifically, I've asked you to come in to talk about the way that your diabetes affects your future health. But we'll also touch upon your current health as well in that discussion. With coming in today, did you have any particular thoughts about what you wanted my help with?
The level of medication and the effects from the thyroid, because I can't, having got my diabetes under control,
yeah,
I feel it's out of control now. As an example, I'm on 3 milligrams of glimepiride. But my level this morning was 9.1.
Okay.
And yeah, in the evening it can drop to 5 point something, or it could be high. There's no control there like I had before.
So your numbers are a little bit higgledy-piggledy at the moment, and I think we've got an explanation from the letter that we got from Dr. Nayar, who's your consultant diabetologist, and he's said that he feels that your thyroid being overactive at the moment is having an effect on your diabetes. And he's made some potential recommendations for changing your medication to try and get that a little bit more predictable for the time being until you've had your thyroid sorted out. Good. Okay. So we've got Dr. Nayar's thoughts, and we're going to have your thoughts as well related to that. Can I check with you, and for the sake of the recording, in terms of the information that we've got about you on your records and elsewhere as well, and for the sake of the people that are listening to this recording as well, you're 69.
Yes.
And you live with your husband.
Widow.
Okay. My apologies, because this is the first time that we've actually met,
isn't it? Yes.
So, could you tell me a little bit about your lifestyle?
My lifestyle, I retired in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
We sold up everything and we went travelling the world. And then recently we lived in Cyprus for 3 years until my husband sadly passed away, and I came back to the UK.
So your husband passed away while you were in Cyprus?
Yes.
And how long ago was that?
2 years.
2 years. And what happened to him?
Cancer.
Have you come to terms, or started to come to terms, with losing your husband?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I've had, I've got, apart from my children far away, I've got family support, so yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. I'm relieved to hear that. Difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was 47 years, so yes.
Yeah. Smoking-wise, it's important to know a little bit about that, because that has such an impact upon where you go and the choices that you and I make today. Was your husband's cancer related to smoking, do you think?
No, they put it down. He did smoke, but they put it down. He had a bad fall.
Okay.
And that, he just didn't get better.
Okay.
And it just erupted. It was quick, as I said.
That was when it was diagnosed, so it may well be that the smoking was crucial in the development of the cancer, and that's how it was diagnosed.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And your own smoking habits?
I made a promise to myself I would give up before the first year of my husband's death, and I did.
Brilliant.
And it's been a year.
Well done. That's really quite some achievement.
Cold turkey.
And that's so important as well, isn't it?
No, I didn't take any help at all. I just did it.
Wow. Okay. For the sake of people listening to this, then smoking is probably the most crucial thing that they can do that will help them with regard to why we're interested in diabetes at all.
Mm.
So smoking and stopping smoking is ideal, but vaping is an alternative that a lot of people aren't certain about whether it's safe or not. I can tell them that it is a lot safer than smoking, and I would recommend it to people that can't stop smoking.
I would too. The time was right for me, and I was aware of this promise.
Yeah.
And I knew the best route may not be the best route for everyone.
Yeah.
The best route for me was to go totally cold turkey.
Yeah.
And I was obviously ready, because you can say it's never easy, but it must have been the right time, because it was relatively easy for me. It might not be easy for other people.
Yeah, okay. So lifestyle-wise with your diabetes, what impact does your diabetes have on your lifestyle?
It's...
Or vice versa.
Well, it's... It's manageable. I am careful on what I eat, but I do allow myself a treat, and I think that's important.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a bar of chocolate a day. Alcohol's not a problem. I can go months and months without even a glass of wine, and then occasionally I'll have a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. It's very much a balance, I think. I think if you can find your life balance, then you can keep your levels in control.
You were diagnosed with diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and that was actually 13 years ago, wasn't it? And how was that diagnosed? How did we come to know that was going on?
I was working full-time, had a stressful job, I was very tired, and I actually thought it was a thyroid problem, which is kind of strange. So I went to my doctor, I didn't go very often, but I went to my doctor because I was getting quite exhausted. And he did the blood tests, and he said, well, your thyroid's not a problem, but you have diabetes and you have high cholesterol. And then, of course, he took my blood pressure, and that was high. So it was all kind of diagnosed with
it. So a combination of factors all together.
All together,
yeah.
Okay. And then I tried a year on without any medication, just strictly on diet. I did get it down a little, but not enough. And he said it's obviously inherent.
Did you have any idea why you'd developed diabetes at that time?
No.
Nothing in the family?
No. High blood pressure, yes. High cholesterol, yes.
Okay.
But not. I was the only one with diabetes.
Okay. A lot of these things add together, so it's important to just talk a little bit about that, if that's okay.
Mm.
But from your point of view at that time, you're not particularly overweight at the moment.
No.
What was your weight like at that time?
Probably a few pounds heavier, but not. So I wasn't in the obese range at all.
Okay, so you've lost a little bit of weight, but
yes,
because your body mass index now is about 27, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and the ideal would be 25 or less, wouldn't it? Between 20 and 25 would be ideal. And a lot of people, when they lose weight, their type 2 diabetes can go away. So you're one of our slimmer diabetics, let's say.
Thank you.
And that protects you as well. We're going to spend quite a bit of time today, if that's okay with you, talking about the things that you can do that will protect you from diabetes having a long-term effect on your health. What do you already know about diabetes and your future health?
Well, I know it can affect all your vital organs, your kidneys, all your vital, your heart, all your vital organs, and your eyes.
Yeah.
I do the annual test, which I think is important, and I think people should do that. I've now developed a cataract, whether that's diabetes related or not, I don't know, but I'll get that seen too. I think you have to be aware there are dangers, and obviously you've got to check your feet, and you have to look after your feet, your extremities.
Symptoms-wise, tiredness was the thing that you presented with in the first instance.
Yeah, tiredness, going to the toilet a lot. Sometimes that's difficult because obviously as you get older, that would happen naturally anyway.
Potentially.
So it's, yes, potentially. Yeah. So, you know, it's...
How's that affecting you at the moment?
When it was bad, it was 8 to 12 times a night. Now it's down to 2.
And that would be an important thing for you because some of the treatment options that we have medication wise can affect you, the frequency if you're going for a pee. So that would be something that would be a deal breaker, really. It would be something you wouldn't be comfortable or happy to be going for a treatment that might increase how often you're going.
No, because if I I'm not with having thyroid problems as well, I have sleep problems and I'm still having sleep problems. But I don't want to take sleeping pills, I really don't, so I would prefer to manage it if I can. And sometimes I can get up and then just go back to bed like in zombie state and go back to sleep. Other times, I sometimes do a 24-hour no sleep or very little.
It sounds as if you feel that the thyroid problem is something that's affecting your sleep.
It is, yes.
Okay. And it may be that some of the treatment options that we've got to help manage your thyroid will actually help you improve your sleep as well. So we'll come to that in a separate consultation, if that's okay.
Yes, that's
and I know that you're seeing a series of people at the moment to help you with your thyroid and also to keep on top of the palpitations that affect you related to all of this as well. Okay, so you've already told me a lot about some of the risks for people with diabetes. just as a headline thing, 70% of people with diabetes will in their lifetime have a problem related to their heart or to stroke disease or angina disease. So they're very, very common, but they are things that we can make an enormous impact, and we can prevent an awful lot of these and stop them from happening at an early age. So they're really worthwhile having an impact on. But I don't want to overemphasize tablets and medication, because there are so many other things that you and I can do together that will have a much bigger influence on your future risk of having those complications of diabetes, and those complications of having high blood pressure potentially, and problems related to that. So the biggest change that you've ever made is stopping smoking. I'm going to use this as a tool. I've got a little crib sheet here that helps me to illustrate to myself and hopefully just share with you what things can make an impact that would actually change your future risk of having problems with regard to heart attacks, strokes and angina. So the first thing to say is we've talked a little bit about lifestyle measures, and the most useful thing that you can do is stopping smoking. And stopping smoking has a massive impact. If I was to stop five people from smoking, we would stop one person dying as a result of heart attacks and strokes over the course of 10 years. A massive impact. It's a massive impact. So stopping smoking is the most important thing that we could possibly do. That's the first thing, okay? You mentioned a couple of other lifestyle changes that you've been conscious of. Perhaps you could tell me a little bit more about those again.
The one thing I do find difficult, and that's related to another illness of mine, is exercise. I've got arthritis in this knee. And where it used to swell up occasionally, it's now seems to be permanently swollen. Whether that is another effect or not, I don't know. I haven't had it diagnosed in this country. So, and it's that is having a big impact on my life as well, because it affects my walking, and I love walking. So,
I'd like to come back to that at a future appointment, but just to highlight what it's likely to be, the most common cause of that sort of problem is going to be an arthritic condition affecting the knee joints, and certainly other things that we can do to symptomatically improve you to keep you as mobile and active as possible. I hear that your preferred mode of exercise is walking. So in a perfect world, if we gave you something that allowed you to walk more, that would be great. But I don't want to give you anything that's going to harm you. So it's important that I don't give you anti-inflammatory painkillers, for example. But we've got a number of other options of painkillers. And ultimately, we could even replace your knee if that's what's going on there. So that could help in that respect. So those things are worthwhile talking about. Perhaps even before you get to the point about thinking about a knee replacement, are there other exercise forms that you would be interested in doing?
Yes, I've got a little one of those little pedal bikes. But at the minute I can't use it because this is so painful. And I quite like swimming as well. So it's managing the pain, so I can then do the exercise, because I'm very keen to stay mobile, obviously.
Great. That's going to be our priority. For today, but that's going to be our priority over the course of the next couple of weeks or so, is to tackle that together and to decide what's suitable for you. So perhaps we'll make a diagnosis and then we'll offer you some choices of treatments or things that might be able to keep you as mobile as you can with regard to your knee. Just as a summary for other people, though, those people that can't walk because of disabilities that are getting in the way of walking will often find that cycling using an exercise bike is a really acceptable other method that doesn't provoke the knees so much. I know that my wife, who's got dreadful knees, can't ski anymore, and she can't do too much hill walking because going up and down hills has a dreadful effect on her knees.
The impact.
But it can sometimes be okay to walk over different terrain, but not the ups and downs. But cycling is something that most people tolerate very well. And you also mentioned, so exercise bikes may work better for people that don't have a great deal of balance, or on the dark nights when it's not possible to get out. So being active in any shape or form is a really positive thing. And when it comes to swimming, if you've got bad arthritis of your knee, the breaststroke sometimes provokes pain. So you might want to look at a different stroke with your swimming.
Right, that's my favourite stroke.
But other people, so think about adapting the stroke that you take, because that can sometimes help. But other people find that they prefer different activities, and that can involve dancing or any sort of workout that involves a little bit of movement. Okay, I'm going to just tell you how good is the evidence for exercise. So, for example, if you were to take some sort of activity and do it, spread it over the whole week and do it for 150 minutes in total, which means 3 times a day, five days a week, you do 10 minutes of some sort of activity, and that might just be walking or it might be going on your exercise bike. If you did that, that protects over the course of 10 years. If I told 10 people to do that, one person would not have a heart attack or a stroke. So it's, again, it's a really big impact. It's really something makes a major difference to people. Okay. Is it all right if we talk a bit about diet as well?
Yes.
How far have you gone with regard to your diet? What changes have you made to your diet?
I've cut out all the obvious sugar. I don't take sugar in drinks. I've never been one for sugary drinks. The biggest problem for people, I think, is hidden sugar, what I call hidden sugar. I know it's a bit of a pain, but I do tend to, until I get to know a product, I do look at the labels.
Yeah.
And I try to keep everything below 7 grams of sugar.
Okay.
I use that as a guideline. It sometimes goes over.
Are we talking about processed foods?
Processed or anything. Or, I mean, the obvious sugars are easy. You know, it's the hidden sugars, the sugars in things that you don't expect to find sugar in. And I find that a bit of a challenge. But where there's a label involved, I do look at the labels.
Yeah.
And I certainly try and avoid all the red ones.
It's so difficult, isn't it?
It is difficult. It's the hidden ones. The obvious ones, like no sugar in your drink, is easy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't drink lemonade or any fizzy drinks full of sugar. I'm not a Coke addict or anything like that. So that is they're what I consider easy ones to get rid of.
Yeah.
You know, cream cakes, chocolate bars, they're all obvious. And you just bring those in very, very occasionally.
Yeah.
You have to, I think the biggest impact on diabetes is you can go too far. I think you have to have a little treat every now and again.
I agree.
But not, you know, you can't eat a chocolate bar every day because. But at the same time, you know, if you do want something, it's everything in moderation, really, I would say.
Yeah, okay. So just to highlight some of the crucial things, you mentioned processed food, which is crucial because most people don't have a chance to understand what it means on these labels. And as a matter of principle, processed foods have sugars in them.
Yes.
Low-fat products have sugars in them to make them palatable.
Yes.
They're really dangerous because it's so confusing. You think you're going for a healthy option, but the low-fat options are often high sugars, so we need to watch out for those.
Yeah.
If you can prepare food from scratch, you've got the time and the inclination, that's wonderful. But generally speaking, if you look out for things that are low GI,
yes,
they're a good idea.
Yeah.
And in terms of the evidence base behind what protects people with diabetes and what protects people generally from heart disease, there's fantastic evidence, particularly for people with diabetes. Mm. And I would have to encourage 8 people to go on a Mediterranean diet for 10 years to save one person from having a heart attack or a stroke or angina.
Yeah.
Really big improvement, really worthwhile improvement. Mm. And the other one that's got a lot of evidence is the low GI diet.
Yeah.
So for people that like to plan their meals in advance and want to have a plan of what they're going to be eating and therefore what they're going to shop for, if they get hold of a few recipe books that are low GI or Mediterranean diet recipe books and then they can prepare healthy food that gives them plenty of variety.
I do try and do a mixture. It's more difficult, I think, if you're on your own.
Yeah.
Living on your own, it's not so easy to start cooking from scratch, and you have to be sort of disciplined to do it.
You can have little cheats, can't you?
Yes, I have.
But,
yeah.
which is okay. Yeah. But if generally speaking, you look out for low GI options and healthy options, fantastic. And often having some support from a dietitian who can show you the way of the little tips and things that might make a difference in terms of
what I tend to do if I'm cooking fresh food, if it's freezable, because I'm on my own, I'll make enough for two meals.
Perfect.
Eat one, freeze one. It's what I live by.
Brilliant. So you've already learned some shortcuts, and that's fantastic. Thank you. Okay. Other lifestyle things. I'm not going to talk too much about lifestyle beyond this, but just some extra additional tips of things that are evidence-based that make a difference. Mm. So we're going to talk a bit about blood pressure. We're going to talk a little bit about statins as well. But first of all, related to blood pressure, because what's the bottom line behind diabetes? You've already mentioned the complications.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that we worry about with diabetes, type 2 diabetes?
Well, presumably it is high blood pressure.
Mm.
Well, ulcers, I don't know, gangrene, or is that's the extreme? Amputation is the extreme, I suppose.
These are really important to some people, but they're very rare. So it's very, very rare for people to lose legs and to get ulcers with diabetes. But that can happen, and that's worthwhile bearing in mind.
Mm.
But diabetes has a much bigger impact in terms of people having heart attacks and strokes and angina.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline thing is that if we can keep those risks down to a minimum, that's all to the good. But I think a lot of people seem to obsess about sugar.
Well, it's not just sugar. It has to be a combination, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about treatment and management for diabetes, I'm not most of the time talking about what do we do in terms of medication to help you with your sugar levels. That's not really my first port of call.
No.
It's so much more important to be emphasising healthy lifestyle options and specifically trying to get the blood pressure down.
Which is reducing salt.
Part of it, So we're going to go through the options of things that will help with bringing blood pressure down in a second. So reducing your blood pressure is going to protect you against heart attacks and strokes and angina. Much more than bringing your sugar levels down. And then on top of that, there are other things that can have a big impact on your risk of having a heart attack, and that's using a statin.
Mm.
Are you taking a statin at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And how do you find that?
Well, I've been on it since 2005. So I was on 40, I'm down to 20 milligrams.
And which statin are you taking?
Simvastatin, is
it? You're taking simvastatin at the moment?
That's the one, yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. We'll perhaps give you some choices as well. Good. Okay, so just talking on that blood pressure side of things, because I want to centre around these lifestyle changes and the choices that you've got. You mentioned already there's lots of things that will bring your blood pressure down, which isn't anything to do with taking a tablet.
No.
I noticed that you're already on 2 tablets to help you with your blood pressure.
Yes, and I do wonder if I've got it more under control now, is it possible to take one of those away?
We potentially can do, depending on the level of your blood pressure control.
Yes.
So what we're aiming for in a perfect world is for your top blood pressure, your systolic blood pressure, to be 130 or less.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can do that, then I'd be much more comfortable with the idea of potentially reducing your blood pressure treatment, blood pressure tablets. So you mentioned one of the crucial things that makes a big difference with regard to your blood pressure, which is avoiding salt in your food. But you can have low salt, which tastes just the same.
Yes.
And actually is healthy for you.
Yeah.
So you can have low salt for cooking and eating. So that's the first thing. We've mentioned a couple of other things along the way that have an influence on blood pressure. Are you aware of what they could be?
Well, exercise.
Yep.
Is the other major one, I think.
So regular exercise has a big impact in more cases than does...
And obviously smoking as well.
Yeah, well, smoking is so important for protecting your heart. But the things that will actually have a direct effect on your blood pressure, so there's the exercise, there's avoiding salt, and what else can help? So a healthy diet you've already mentioned. Yes. So we talked about those two options, which is the Mediterranean diet and the low GI diet. And losing a little bit of weight makes a massive difference to your blood pressure, even as little as 5 kilograms.
Yeah.
Although, to be perfectly honest with you, the majority of people, as they go through their lives, they end up putting on weight. So I'm realistic in life, and I'm always happy to know that a patient's not putting on weight rather than putting on weight. That can sometimes be a reasonable target to aim for in the first instance. But a lot of people, if they lose 5 kilograms, they'll find their blood pressure comes down very substantially as well. So that's what always worthwhile heading for as well. Okay, alcohol,
again, I think it's in moderation. I don't have a problem with that. As I say, I can go weeks and not have a drink, and then I might have 2 glasses of wine in 1 week, but I never have more than 2 glasses of wine.
Your alcohol intake is certainly not an issue, not a problem to you.
But it can be for some people, I would imagine.
So people that are consuming more than 14 units in a week, that will have an impact upon their blood pressure control as well. Mm-hmm. And cutting their alcohol down to 14 or less will actually have a very positive impact upon the blood pressure too. So that's one of the other things that they can do to protect themselves. And here's a trade secret that not many people know about, that if you add flax seed or linseed into your diet, and usually you'd perhaps have that with your cereal in the morning, maybe 30 grams of flax seed in your cereal in the morning, will also bring down your blood pressure substantially as well. So that's a very effective treatment that you might want to consider as well. Can we come back to the statin? Because you mentioned that you're on a statin. Mm-hmm. When you made that decision and that choice to go on a statin, how did you come to the decision? How did you decide?
I didn't actually. I was told I had to take it.
Okay. Well, let me share with you whether you want to carry on taking a statin. And let's decide whether it's worth your while. Mm. Okay. So statins are really worthwhile because they save lives, particularly in people with diabetes. Mm. And what they do is maybe you could tell me what they do.
Well, I am aware that they do protect your heart, but they lower your cholesterol, which obviously, if you've got high cholesterol, that clogs your arteries. So, I think that's why you're taking it from that point of view. I've now been on it since 2005, so do I really need it anymore?
Did you have any side effects with it at all?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay. So a statin is helpful, and we don't really understand why it's helpful. It does reduce cholesterol, but we shouldn't be obsessing about cholesterol numbers, although we tend to measure them quite frequently every year in the case of people with diabetes. But the truth of it is that being on a statin is the thing that protects you rather than the cholesterol number.
Yes.
So if I was to give 44 people a statin for 5 years, I would protect one person from having a heart attack or stroke. So it's not nearly as good as blood pressure control, it is pretty good. Actually, if you take it for a bit longer than that, it seems to be even more protective. So all I need to do is to treat 7 or 10 people over the course of 10 years to protect one person. So it seems to be worthwhile using over a long period of time. So your question seems to be answered in that the longer you use it, the more benefit that you'll potentially get from it.
Oh, that's fine.
So that makes sense to use it, particularly if you're not having any side effects.
Yes.
As to what dose you should be using and which statin you should be using, I'm just going to share one thing with you. So you're on a medication to lower your blood pressure called amlodipine, and you're on a tablet called simvastatin.
Yeah.
And those two medications don't go well together.
Right.
So it might be safer for you to be on a tablet called atorvastatin, which is perhaps a bit more powerful than the simvastatin, but you might want to adjust the dose according to what works for you. So 10 milligrams of atorvastatin would give you just as much benefit with less risk, and that might be a good starting dose. But as time goes by, doctors might be suggesting to you you want to be thinking about increasing your atorvastatin dose, so long as you're not getting muscle soreness. The higher the dose you go with atorvastatin, the more likely you are to get some sore muscles. But the vast majority of people don't have problems. Maybe 1 in 10 people will get muscle soreness with being on a statin. And it's rare for them to have any serious complications with being on a statin. Okay. What do you think about that?
Yes, it depends whether, as I say, I haven't been on, I was on just one blood pressure tablet for quite some time, but I don't know, couldn't come under control, so they put me on two. I'm on Lipirasol as well. So,
Lisinopril, isn't it?
I mean, if something works better, then I would prefer to change if that's what's recommended.
Yeah, I think that would probably be sensible if you're comfortable to. And you're no more likely to have side effects, but if you are having problems, we could always change you back if you want to. Okay, so your most recent blood pressure readings that we have from Professor Norton, who's very kindly shared some information with me just very recently with his last letter to me, showed that your last blood pressure reading was 138/74. Not quite to target, so worthwhile working on. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean taking more tablets. No. You may choose to follow some of these this advice. Yeah. It sounds like you're already avoiding salt. We talked about the healthy diet, and it sounds like you're pretty sensible about your diet already, so there's not much impact to make in that. The exercise side of things...
That would help, yes.
Could be something to work on. How are you going to make that happen, do you think?
Well, I'll just have to start it and see and hope this will hold up to it.
Come and see me. We'll help you with regard to the pain in your knee. We'll hopefully allow you to be a little bit more active and a little bit more mobile.
Yes.
Potentially, the first thing that you want to try... when that knee gets a little bit better, would be more activity on the...
On the bike, yes.
On the bike that you've got. So this is a bike inside, isn't it?
Yes, you sit down, actually.
Yeah.
You can sit on an ordinary chair and do it. It's just a little mini one.
So that might be worthwhile doing.
I'll do that,
and then swimming, depending on the stroke, might be something that you'd be happy to look at.
I'll probably leave the swing for the time being and wait and just use the bike and the walking for the moment.
Alcohol's not an issue to you.
No.
So the last measure here of adding a little... What do you normally have for your breakfast?
I normally have toast or Weetabix or something. Low in sugar.
Yeah.
So I could get the flax seeds or linseeds and add that to that. So that would work.
So you could either add it onto your Weetabix or potentially with some porridge. In the morning.
Yeah.
So those are a couple of possibilities for you.
So it's flax seeds or linseeds.
Yeah. So flax and linseed are the same thing. And they're usually available from most supermarkets. You might need to ask the people in the supermarket where they keep them. They're sometimes well hidden. Worthwhile looking out for.
I'll
change your statin over to one that's slightly more safe and hopefully slightly more effective. It's a slightly more powerful one, but it's not any more likely to cause any side effects to you.
Right.
And let me know if it doesn't suit you. All of those things are important. We're going to now come on to sugar control as well, which is what tends to be what most people want to get on top of when they get told they've got diabetes. They want to get on top of the sugar levels. Perhaps you could just give me a feel for where you're at with your sugar levels.
I take it every other day in the morning before breakfast and before evening meal.
Do you drive?
No, I have got a driving license, but no, I don't drive.
Okay, so when you start on some of your medication and you're on glimepiride, then it's important that you share that information with the DVLA.
I don't own a car, so I'm not driving. Okay. I've got a driving license, but I chose not to drive and I came back to the UK.
But if you are going to be driving, then you have to tell them. And this goes without saying that you're not a professional driver. You don't drive an HGV and drive a taxi or anything like that. So for people who have Group 2 driver's licenses, then there's extra measures in terms of how frequently they need to be measuring their blood sugars to make sure that they're safe for the public too. Okay, good. So you're measuring your sugars quite frequently because you're on a medication that potentially can cause hypos.
I'm aware of that. I did have, when I was on it before, I had hypos.
Yeah.
But it was while I was in hospital having a repair done.
Yeah.
And I crashed twice while I was in hospital. They treated that.
Talk me through what happens when you get a hypo.
Well, you start to feel dizzy. Me personally start to feel a bit dizzy and lightheaded. At the time I had those, I was already in bed.
Yeah.
And I think part of it was because I'd had an operation, you obviously have to fast for the hours before. They gave me a glucose tablet, which was... and that brought it back up.
Yeah.
But then when I crash to get, because I had to stay in overnight. When I did it again the next morning, it was still low.
Were you still on your glimepiride at the time?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and they just gave me milk and a banana and it came back up.
So it's something to be aware of if you're not able to eat, that we need to be thinking about, do you still need to be on the glimepiride at the time?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's something to be aware of.
I mean, I carry jelly babies in my bag.
Great. And you've still got an awareness of what the symptoms and signs are.
Yes,
are
hypo. Yes, yes.
And the people around you are aware of where your jelly babies are kept. And,
yeah. Okay.
That's really important. Generally speaking, in most people that have got type 2 diabetes, we don't get them to check their blood sugars too regularly.
No.
But the two exceptions in terms of diabetes treatments that where you do need to be keeping a regular check is when you're on insulin.
Yes.
And when you're on this family of medication called sulfonylureas, and glimepiride is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to talk about that, because that's where your blood sugars are sometimes going a bit too low.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You're on metformin.
Yes.
And metformin is normally one of the earlier treatments that most people with type 2 diabetes go for.
Mm.
When you were first diagnosed, it was just tiredness that was the symptom, though, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So the normal first-line tablet that we would recommend is metformin.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that for several reasons. The first is it's very safe.
Mm-hmm.
But the second is that it protects the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So how helpful is it in terms of protecting the heart? Well, I have to treat 14 people for 10 years for one person not to have a heart attack, stroke, or angina. So it's very effective for protecting the heart, and it also brings sugars down, but it does it quite safely.
Yes.
But it can have side effects. Have you noticed any problems with it?
No. And I don't know how much substance is to this, but when I was having problems with my sugar levels when I was abroad, they thought I might have become intolerant to metformin. But I don't, because I've been on it so long, and I'm still on 850.
In what way were you intolerant of it?
Because it was they couldn't get my sugar levels under control.
Okay.
And it wasn't my diet, and my sugar levels just would not come under control. It was high in the morning, which it is now, and it was low at night.
In retrospect, do you think that might be anything to do with your thyroid condition?
I don't know.
No.
So this is what I don't know.
Yeah.
But then when I came back to the UK, that's when they first put me on the
glimepiride.
It wasn't effective while I was abroad. When I came back to the UK, it started to take effect, and my sugar level was really in a very good level. Then it got too low, so they took me off it.
Yeah.
But then I've got the thyroid and it spiked again.
Yeah.
So this is where I've got a problem with. I don't know where I'm going right or wrong.
That's really helpful to understand a little bit about that. Can I just double check? Because some people, when they take metformin, will find that they find that they can feel a bit nauseated.
Yeah.
Not being a problem. And that sometimes helps people in terms of their appetite. So some people with type 2 diabetes eat a bit too much.
Yeah.
And that can be quite a helpful thing. But they can sometimes get a bit of diarrhea or a bit of indigestion as well.
I do have a slight problem with that. And sometimes I do get diarrhea. But it's...
If you are having it more frequently, sometimes we find that changing over to the slow-release form of metformin makes it less likely to happen.
Yes.
So that's worthwhile bearing in mind. But
but
the type that you're on is the most effective, and the slow-release medication is an alternative that you can use if you really need to use it. But it is a helpful treatment. Having said that, we do need to be very careful in people that have got bad kidney problems, a bit of wear and tear in the kidneys.
Yeah.
The worse the wear and tear is, the lower the dose needs to be of metformin, and some people would have to stop their metformin.
Yeah.
But your kidneys are fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really helpful. So you're on two of the first line treatments for your sugar levels in terms of metformin and glimepiride, which is a sulfonylurea. As an overall thing, though, I just want to share some numbers with you. So overall, sugar control is so much less important than control of blood pressure and being on a statin and the lifestyle measures that we've measured before, that I would have to treat 119 people with sugar-lowering medication over 5 years Now, I say sugar-lowering medication, but that's on an average basis. Yeah. So for dropping your sugars by 10 millimoles, and that's 0.9 in old money, in 0.9% in old money, then I'd have to do that to 119 people for 5 years to save one person from having a heart attack, stroke, or angina. So we're really talking about very little impact compared to those other measures. Blood pressure control, statin, exercise, and lifestyle measures are so much more important than the sugar control. But the sugar control can be important when you're feeling really thirsty or peeing a lot. And I think that that's what describes you when you are having trouble with your sugar levels.
Yes.
And when you've got a lot of symptoms, then often glycoside or glimepiride, which are the sulfonylureas, these are the ones that bring your sugar levels down quite well as a tablet and can be very powerful in terms of making you feel better, not needing to get up for a pee so often or feeling quite so thirsty. So that's really important and was really important for you. But things have changed a bit and you're now getting prone to getting some hypos at the moment. So it might be worthwhile, from what Dr. Nayar is saying to us at the moment, to think about slightly reducing your glimepiride dose. And if needs be, to think about adding in another tablet that might have an impact on your sugar levels in the build-up for your operation. How does that sound?
That sounds, well, I'll take your advice on it, because it's, as you say, things have changed. When I was first diagnosed, it was sugar, sugar, sugar. You know, and, you know, because I went a year without getting any medication at all to see what I could do just on diet and bringing the sugar levels down myself. And it wasn't enough. And then they started putting me on the metformin. But that level, I mean, I'm on it 850 three times a day. So I don't know if that's too high.
It's higher than I would normally use it, to be fair. So if that's causing you some tummy upset, I normally don't go any higher than a total of 2 grams per day, which is 500 milligram tablets, two tablets twice a day.
Which is what I was on before. I would really like to
Let's put you back. That would be a very reasonable measure for you to take, because there's no additional benefit in terms of protecting your heart of being on a higher dose than that. Good. Let's agree to do that in that case. So Dr. Nayar suggested another medication whilst we're reducing your glimepiride. Now, glimepiride has been wonderful for me. It really did a great deal of good for that thirst and for that peeing a lot. So that was important for you at the time. But now that you're not having so much of those symptoms, but you perhaps want to be on something that's going to keep your sugars under control, but do it in a more safe manner, so that you don't need quite so much monitoring, particularly while you're having the operation. All right. And the last thing you want is to have a hypo like you did when you were fasting for the operation.
Well,
So let's talk about the one of the DPP-4 inhibitors. It's really complicated to get your head around the various different names for this this group of medications. But these are called gliptins. The one that we most commonly use these days is linagliptin, because it seems to be safer for the kidneys, and there's less blood tests that we need to do for you to keep an eye on your kidneys when we're using it. So linagliptin would be probably the one that we'd be starting you on. I don't want to change too many things too quickly, and probably the best thing to do, apart from the small changes that I'm going to make to your medication today that we've already agreed on, is for me to get our diabetes nurse, Janet, or Michelle, who's now taking over the diabetes management, to keep an eye on you as we adjust your medication, and probably you're going to end up on a small dose of linagliptin and maybe increase it depending on how it's affecting your sugar level. But while we're doing that, while you're still on the glimepiride, we still need to be doing blood sugars regularly until you, until we've got a feel for what's right for you. Now, I'll tell you about some of the advantages and some of the disadvantages of being on a gliptin. So it brings your sugars down, but there are a few patients that do get some side effects with it. They tend to be relatively minor. Some people will get a little bit of congestion, facial congestion, and it can occasionally cause headaches. There's a tiny increased risk of getting a problem with your pancreas, so inflammation of your pancreas. So if it's causing significant tummy pains, you might want to stop it and let us know, and we might need to adjust it and go for something slightly different. What the gliptins do is that they increase a substance called incretin, and they also increase your own natural insulin production. Mm. So they're quite a good treatment to use quite early on in your diabetes history. So we tend to use them quite early on for people that are struggling with their sugar control. Okay. And those are tablets.
Mm.
They're a bit pricey, but which is why we probably haven't used them up until now.
Right.
But since we're now struggling with getting your sugars under control with something that's going to be safe for you, I think that's reasonable to be using something like that. So that's the one that Dr. Nair are suggesting for you. I'll take you through a couple of other options, not because we think they're the right choice for you, but just so that I can share those choices with other people, if that's okay. Had you come across this one before, that linagliptin?
No.
No. Okay. And did Dr. Nair, when he saw you, mention anything about the choices that you had of diabetes treatments when he saw you?
No.
Not really?
No.
Was it helpful for me and the diabetes team to take you through that in the community and help you make those decisions? So your blood sugars, on average, will come down. Well, we measure them. We still measure them in percentages.
Yeah.
And we also measure them in millimoles per litre. Mm. It's confusing that we've got both of those types of measurement. Mm. What your numbers at the moment, you said that your average blood sugar was at what level? 80, wasn't it?
80, yes.
So let's go for millimoles per mole, which is the units that you're now used to.
Yeah.
So realistically, the gliptins will reduce your numbers by about 5 to 10.
Yeah.
So not the be-all and end-all, but they'll bring your sugars down, providing they suit you okay.
Yeah.
That's what we're aiming for. So you need to take those every single day. And that's usually just a once-a-day tablet for you. Okay. Have you heard anything about the other options for treating diabetes?
No.
Okay.
I did do some research, but it was a while ago, something about freezing and killing the fat cells, but I never heard it again, so I don't know if that was a dead thing or not.
Okay, that might be something that people used in research, but it's not something that's generally used at the moment.
No, I hadn't heard anything more. It was something that was on the fringe, but it never came to light, so I don't know what the other options are.
Sure, okay. Well, I'm going to mention something and then discount it because I don't think you'll like it. So there is a treatment called an SGLT2 inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
But the downside of that, so it has other names. The most commonly used one that we have at the moment is called empagliflozin. It's the gliflozin family of medications. And what they do, and they're very good at doing this, is that they encourage your kidneys to get rid of more sugar.
All right.
But it has a downside.
Bad for your kidneys.
Well, it's not bad for your kidneys at all. It seems to be quite good for your kidneys, but what it does, and I'll tell you about the positive things in a second, but what it does is it makes you pee more.
All right.
Now, most people tolerate that really well.
Yes.
Most people, it's not an issue at all, but in your case, you might not like it because you had it before and it might come back again.
Mm.
So that might be a deal breaker. I don't know.
No. I would. If that is more effective, I'd be willing to try it and see how it went.
Yeah.
And then, change it if it didn't work out.
It's not more effective. As effective as the gliptin that I've offered you and Dr. Nair has suggested to you. It's about as effective. So it brings down your blood sugars by 10 millimoles per mole at the best.
All right.
But where some people do like it is that it helps them lose weight because they're getting rid of sugar.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And that can itself be a positive thing in diabetes in terms of your blood pressure and your risk overall.
Yeah.
And there is some evidence that that's a positive treatment in terms of protecting your heart.
Yeah.
So I would have to treat 40 people over the course of 3 years to protect one person from having a heart attack or a general stroke. Whereas a lot of the other diabetes treatment don't have that evidence behind it.
No.
So that has some advantages in it.
Yeah.
So that might be worthwhile considering at some stage.
Yes, okay.
But again, that's going to be a tablet that you would take, and you'd usually take that on a daily basis. So, sounds quite positive, but you might be prone to more water infections, might be prone to thrush with that, and you might pee a little bit more as well.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I think maybe...
We might not choose that now.
Now, choose the other one and then see how that, it goes and then change if it doesn't.
It is a bit on the pricey side, so it's not the most cost-effective treatment that's around there, but it is an alternative as things progress. So we might use it at a later time.
I'd prefer to take it, because it's obviously, without the knowledge, it's a bit difficult for me to make a decision.
Isn't it?
I'd rather take your advice on that, if that's all right.
This is what Dr. Nair has recommended for you, based on expectations of managing your sugar levels. But there isn't any endpoint data. And what I mean by that is we don't know that it protects hearts.
No.
But it does bring your sugar levels down, so it'll hopefully improve your symptoms. So it's probably worthwhile doing from that point of view.
Okay.
So I'm going to mention a couple of other alternatives. We're going to touch upon insulin.
Yeah.
So these are the two injectable choices. Insulin, which is a wonder drug. Insulin is wonderful, particularly for patients who've got type 1 diabetes.
Yes.
And we use it for people who've got particularly high blood sugars, for people that have got lots of symptoms with a diabetes, very thirsty, peeing an awful lot. And it's miraculous that it brings your sugar levels down.
Yeah.
And it can bring it down enormously well.
Yeah.
And there's a choice of different delivery mechanisms, usually with pens.
Yes.
Often it's just a once-a-day injection that you have, but some people will need them with meals or twice a day.
Yes,
the regime can change. But the most common regimes that we use with people who've got type 2 diabetes would be a daily treatment in the first instance.
Yeah.
And then occasionally we might do a twice-daily treatment, depending on the type of insulin that we'd be using. And that tends to take sugar out of the blood, but it puts it into the cells.
Yes.
So what's going to happen as a result of that?
I don't know. Well,
so there's two potential problems with that. The first is the same thing that you've had with the glimepiride.
Oh,
you can get
of course,
So you have to watch out for that.
So you
have to measure your blood sugars more frequently.
Quite frequently, yes.
To look out for that, particularly when you're on a new treatment. And the second thing that it does is the sugar's no longer in the blood, it's going elsewhere, and it's being turned into fat.
All right, so you put on weight. That one's not good.
And that's one of the things that a lot of people don't like about the idea of being on insulin.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like the idea of being on insulin because they put on weight, and also because of the implications with regard to driving, because they'd have to monitor themselves more frequently, and it is quite inconvenient. But it works wonders for high blood sugars to bring them down.
I was close to that in 2015, and that's when they put me on the glimepiride, and that avoided it, and I would really not like to go down that route unless it was life-threatening.
I don't think it's necessary at the moment.
I think
we can find other alternatives for you at the moment. So we're going to come back onto the last of the generally available options that might suit somebody like you, but I'm not specifically recommending it to you at the moment, but just bear this one in mind. So there's a group of injectable medications, and those injectable medications are called GLP-1 agonists. They're the TIDE medications, so things like liraglutide. We also have other options of liraglutide. The most commonly used ones that we use in the Sunderland area is a medication called dulaglutide. And dulaglutide is a weekly injection. And that can be quite attractive, just to have your medication on one occasion once a week. And the risk of getting hypos with that is extremely slim.
Oh, that would be good.
So there's the potential for that being a worthwhile treatment to be going for. There are different versions of these glutides that might suit different people. They block one of the hormones in the body called glucagon, and glucagon has an influence on your sugar levels as well. So they're blocking the glucagon and stopping you from producing too much sugar in the first place. Affects the way that the liver works as well. However, it has its downsides, as all things do, and some people can be nauseated with it and can have diarrhea with it. And potentially that can slightly increase the risk of them having this problem with their pancreas, where their pancreas becomes nastily inflamed and very sore, and that can be quite dangerous. the rate of that, the risk of that, it seems to be very small, but you need to be aware that that's a potential risk with using that treatment. It's not very cost effective, it's very expensive, in other words, so it's not normally the sort of thing that's likely to be offered to you in the first instance, unless nothing else was particularly helpful for you. But we do have some early evidence, and I emphasise most of these medications that I've mentioned down the list here, at the end, towards the end of the list, are things that are out more recently.
Yes.
We don't have the same... We don't have the same safety data often. We don't have the same experience and knowledge of these to know how safe they are and how effective they are to protect you. But overall, with the studies that have been done with this group of medication, it seems to be that I need to treat 50 people for 4 years to protect one person from having a heart attack or stroke.
It's going down and down. Yes,
so they are protective, but not enormously protective. No. They're nothing like what blood pressure does for you. They're nothing like what statins do for you. They're nothing like what all the health, the lifestyle measures that we've recommended to you as well. But they are there, and they do have an influence upon your risk of heart attacks, and they also have an effect on your blood sugars. So again, that sort of medication could potentially improve your blood sugar control by maybe 10 millimoles per per mole. Does that make sense?
It does.
Having listened to all of those options, perhaps we could just hit some of the highlights again and summarise what you think we should be doing for you at the moment.
I would like to reduce the metformin. I don't want to go down the insulin injection route yet. I don't think it's necessary. Try the I can't remember the name.
Linagliptin.
Try that.
Yeah.
And you know, just see how that combination works. I think, and in alongside that, the medication side, obviously, I'd try the exercise route as well, and the add in the flax seeds and see if that works.
Great.
And see if that will bring it under control. Obviously, I'd hopefully get this thyroid sorted within the next couple of months, and I think that will help enormously as well.
So the, I don't like to change too many things all at the same time.
No.
There's no harm in me dropping your metformin down to 1 gram twice a day with food. We'll do that today. We're also going to change your statin from simvastatin to atorvastatin, but we're putting you on to 10 milligrams of atorvastatin, and I'm almost certain that you'll have no problems with that because you've been okay with simvastatin. It seems a safer option for you. So that's easy for me to do that today. It's also worthwhile because you're still getting some hypos at different times of day. I think you mentioned the evening was difficult for you.
Well, it's not. It's coming down. I've only had, since I've gone back on it, I've only had one hypo where it dropped below 3.
Okay.
So I don't know if you want me to stay on 3 milligrams a day or if you want me to drop back down to 2 or...
Well, Dr. Nail's suggestion was maybe dropping it down a little bit. So maybe you drop it down to 2 and see how it suits you. And then I'll get you to come back to see my diabetes nurse within the next fortnight.
Yes, okay, fine.
So that we can go through the pros and cons, but we've talked about the pros and cons really, so that we can make a plan of action as to how we change you over from mostly glimepiride to bring your sugars down to actually the medication that you've decided on, which is the linagliptin. And we'll probably start you on a small dose of linagliptin, make sure it's okay with you until we get you comfortable, and you might need to do a little bit more monitoring while we're changing over.
Yeah, that's fine. It's not a problem testing myself. I've done it for a long time, so it's not a problem. I keep a record. So.
Great. So just to reiterate the things that are going to make the most difference in terms of your long-term risk to your heart, we're going to keep you on the metformin because that really works. That's the most effective sugar medication that we have. But we've also already talked about the lifestyle measures that you're happy to be taking. You're already on a healthy diet, but we've given everybody else some tips about how to make sure that they choose some healthier options, Mediterranean diet-wise and low GI diet-wise. You've already stopped smoking a long time ago, and that's made a major difference to your risk. And activity levels is something that we're going to help you with, because we're going to sort out this problem with your knee to a degree. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to see you again shortly about your knee,
yeah.
and hopefully that will allow you to be a bit more active. That's important that we tackle help.
Yes.
Your statin, it's important that you get on the right statin.
Yeah.
We may potentially increase the dose of that.
Mm.
But I'm a little bit uncertain about how important that is. The evidence base for changing the dose of the statin is not so important.
Yeah.
A lot of people would encourage me to try and increase the dose of your statin if you're tolerating okay.
Yeah.
We'll maybe do that. Mm. And you're already going to do some things that are going to impact your blood pressure.
Mm.
So things that change your weight will impact your blood pressure. You mentioned flaxseed. You're not a drinker. You mentioned exercise is going to be more important and more of what you're going to be doing.
Yes.
And low salt.
Yes.
Anything else that you want me to go over at all?
No, I think that's covered most of what I need to do. Yeah.
Would it be helpful for me to give you a copy of this sheet?
Yes.
That we've used to make these decisions for you today.
Yes.
And highlight the choices that you've made.
Yeah. Yes.
And that so that you, when you go back to see our diabetes nurse, whether that's Janet or Michelle,
you can take it
with you and just highlight what you're interested in.
Yeah,
doing.
That would be helpful. Yeah.
So I'll tick and highlight the things that you're going to go for. Okay. Great.
Let's hear it for our GP.